Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bobby Moore as a Jeff Hurst. Trevor Brookin and Billy Bones, Paolo Di Canio, West Ham United, more than just a podcast, more than just a podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. This is More Than Just a Podcast, and today we've got a special edition. It's an extra bonus edition. New presenter, Nigel Khan, fulfilled a life ambition to speak to one of his West Ham heroes, and that is David Cross, David Psycho Cross. He caught up with him Friday just before the Swansea game in an hour-long special, and here's Nigel and Psycho.
Right, and I welcome to More Than Just a Podcast, West Ham legend, and one of only 32 players to win an FA Cup winners' medal that's ever played for the club. It's David Psycho Cross. Afternoon, David.
Afternoon, Nigel. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. You keeping well?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, that's good. I'll start with a brief outline. You were born in Heywood, Lancashire, and you started your career with Rochdale.
That's right.
And that's your local team, yeah? Was you a Rochdale supporter as a boy, or...?
Oh, no, sorry, no, I never supported... No, I was a Newcastle United supporter when I was a kid, but I just... When I was at school, I just got the opportunity to go to Rochdale to train with them, and gradually I played for the B team, the A team, then the reserves, and then when I was in the sixth form at school, they offered me a professional contract when I was just short of being 18.
So you progressed into their first team. What division would they be in? Division 3 for them?
Yeah, they were in Division 3. Strangely enough, I'd never played in the bottom division, which is, I don't know whether that's a good thing or not, but Rochdale were in the third division during my tenure there. So then I moved up to play for Norwich and went into the second division, and then we went straight up that season. And so I played in the old first division, and then that was that. So, yeah, they were in the third division. So it was a hard division when you were 18 and just learning the game. It was a good learning curve for me.
So would you say it's a good grounding? A lot of clubs now, they send players out on loan. West Ham have done it, sent two players to Bolton. They like to send players out on loan. Do you think that's a good way of progressing younger players?
Well, yeah, it probably is. But, I mean, from my point of view, I didn't know any better. So when I went to Rochdale, you know, that was what I thought it was. Gradually, as I went through the clubs I played for, and I played for, arguably, if you like, better sides, then, you know, things changed a little bit. But I think if a kid goes to a big club, like a Premier League club, from being very young, and then gets loaned out when they're 17 or 18, then they can actually hit a bit of a wall because they're so used to playing on good surfaces and good training facilities. And sometimes, you know, it's a bit of a culture shock to them when they realise that that's not what it is everywhere that they're going to play. I was lucky. I played at Rochdale when, I mean, a good example would be when I was at Rochdale, if you didn't get in before, I mean, we'd train at 10 o'clock, we'd start training at 10. If you didn't get in before 9:30, then you didn't get any kit. you know, the kit was picked up by the lads who were in early, and you didn't have any. So you always had something in the boot of your car. just in case there was nothing for you. So, you know, now there's kit everywhere. You go, it's all lined up for you. You've got someone looking after you. Well, you know, I was used to, you know, working at ground level. And as, gradually as I moved up, then it got better and better. And I realized that there were better things out there. But for kids who get long from professional clubs, it can be a bit of a culture shock, as I said before.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, I look at the way the academies are structured with the, they played like under 17s, under 18s, 19s, up to under 23, where before there was the reserve football, where the youngsters would mix with the older pros that were coming back from injury. Do you think that's a bit of a, something's missing at the moment? Because we do seem to struggle getting youth players. Only the top, top youth players seem to get a chance, where perhaps some that blossom late are not getting that chance now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I strolled out for my first game with Rochdale, having left school 5 weeks earlier. You know, and I'm playing now in front of, even then, back in the time I started, you know, there was 7,000 or 8,000 people on in the crowd. And I was playing against hairy, backsided pros who, you know, knew the game inside out. So if I didn't learn quickly, then I didn't learn at all. You know, I'd be out of it. So that was good for me because I just realized what it was all about very early. And I knew what I had to do, and I knew I had to get stronger. I knew I had to understand the game better. It can be, for kids who don't get that, as you say, because they don't really mix with the first team when they're young. You know, it can be very, very difficult to all of a sudden go from academy football to go to what is the real deal.
Yeah. I do watch West Ham Academy from time to time, and some players I feel would perhaps be better off being thrown into the first team to see if they can sink or swim rather than keep following that path.
Well, sink or swim's a great expression, and that's what happened to me. You know, if you couldn't cope with it, that was it. You were out, you know. And I mean, I had a 1-year contract. And if I didn't learn quickly and if I didn't realise what I had to do, then I would have been out of it. I'd have had a year and then I would have been considered not good enough. But I did learn. I mean, one of the things that I have, you know, I was intelligent and I learned quickly. If one of the coaches told me to do something, I did it. Presumably because he knew better than me. You know, I learned quickly. I played for Rochdale for 2.5 seasons, and gradually I got a little bit better every season. And by my third season, I started scoring a lot of goals, and everything fell into place for me. But then when I got transferred to Norwich City and moved up a division, then that process started again. You know, I had to learn what it was like against better teams and against better players and against sometimes international players I was playing against, you know. And so there was always a bit of learning to do. And, you know, I learned quickly, and I realised that because of what I was as a footballer, then, you know, I knew what I had to do and I knew how I had to do it.
Yeah. I mean, luckily for us, you progressed through Norwich, Coventry, West Brom, and then on to West Ham. Now, when you joined West Ham, we were struggling at the time. That was not, don't want to give my age away, but that was my first season of watching West Ham as a little boy, 77-78. So
yeah,
we did eventually go down that season, but you joined halfway through. Funnily enough, your first game was against West Brom. Who we had bought you off. What was that like?
Yeah, it was difficult, really. I mean, I actually signed for West Ham on my 27th birthday. So, you know, I still wasn't really the finished article. You know, I had something that John Lyle had seen over the years. He'd watched me play for Norwich City 4 or 5 seasons early, and I wanted to sign me then, but Norwich wouldn't let me go. In actual fact, the day that when West Ham signed Graham Paddon from Norwich City, John wanted to sign me with Graham as a double signing, but Norwich wouldn't go for that. They wouldn't let two of us go to the same club. And Graham actually was my big pal anyway, you know, and so that would have been good for me to go to West Ham at that point. But going back to the thing about leaving West Brom, on the Wednesday and playing against them on the Saturday. It was very difficult because, you know, I played with those lads for so long. And it was a great set of lads at West Brom. You know, it was a good team. The two centre-halves, John Wyle and Alistair Robertson, were very good players. So it was very difficult to go there on the debut and play. But once you got that out of the way, then, you know, I kind of settled in fairly well at West Ham. And but as I say, I wasn't the finished article by any means. And John Wyle, who'd seen something in me when I was at Norwich, worked on that. He worked on what I was good at. He worked me on other things. He taught me other things. And, you know, I was a very raw player, even at the age of 27. And the next 5 years were probably the best five of my career.
Yeah. Was John Bond the manager at Norwich then, or did he come
no,
off?
No, Ron Saunders was the manager. Ron and again, he was a major influence on me because he taught me probably what the West Ham fans liked about me more than anything, which was, you know, how to take care of centre-backs before they took care of me.
Yeah. I mean, that first season, so as I said, you come in 77-78, wasn't a great season. We ended up going down into Division 2, as was.
Yeah.
I think you scored 9 goals, though, in 20 games.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many I got, but I remember vividly that West Ham hadn't won a game. They'd not got one single win. And I signed for them on December the 8th, which, as I said, was my birthday.
Yeah.
And 2 days later, although I wasn't eligible to play, we beat Man United. I think it was 2-1 at Upton Park. Trevor scored the winner. And I always felt that might have been, you know, just a new signing, maybe just helped and sent the lads out, you know, thinking that maybe there was some goals to come. Because John signed me mainly because we hadn't been scoring goals. I think Halsey and Johnny Radford were up front at the time. And John, I don't think, had scored a goal for West Ham. You know?
He never did.
You know, he was a very, very good player. And, you know, me taking his place was like a bit of pressure for me because I'd watched him over those years playing for Arsenal and I realised how good he was. And I thought, well, if he's not scoring, you know, I wonder what's happening. But I did find that playing with Derek Hales was good because Halsey was a terrific finisher. And I like working hard. So, you know, that was a decent combination. And then, of course, Pop Robson, you know, was part of that as well. So I played with Pop. But, yeah, the season was difficult. So we haven't won a game until the 10th of December. Then we had a decent little run. Then it looked as though we might stay up. And then just at the last minute, we couldn't do it. And then we lost to Liverpool on the last game of the season and sent down.
Yeah, 2-0. Your first goal, I don't know if you know, I do know, because I've looked it up, was against Leicester City on the 31st of December.
I didn't know that.
You had about 2 or 3 games where you didn't score. And then you went and scored against Leicester.
Right.
And then you ended up with 9. I've got it. Yeah, 9 in 20 games that season, which is a fantastic tally. If you look at now top flight scorers, what they score, the amount of goals.
Yeah, well, I mean, over a 20-game period, anything can happen, can't it? You know, a hat-trick and then a double, and you've scored 5 of those 9 in 2 games. So, you know, statistics, they can say what you want them to prove, really. But what I did find was I was amazed, really, at the number of chances, because we're such a creative side. It suited me down to the ground, you know, to play with Trevor and Dev. You know, those kind of creative players, I got so many chances, and that's what I was a good finisher, and I like getting in the box. I think I can remember talking to a couple of the wide players, you know, Patsy and later Jimmy Neighbour, and they were saying, oh, you know, I'll try and pick you out. I said, don't try and pick me out. Just put the ball in the box and leave the rest to me. Just put it in the box. If I know it's coming in, I'll get on the end of it. And if I don't get on the end of it, blame me. I said, you know, if you don't put it in, I'll be blaming you. And gradually, you know, that worked, really, because the lads realised that if it went in the box, there was a chance I'd probably get in, you know, one way or the other. I would get in and get on the end of it and at least give us a chance of scoring.
Did West Ham play a system that you liked? You know, there's big talk about the West Ham way. We like to play football, attractive football. You're a would you say a robust, he was a robust attacker?
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at Andy Carroll, I suppose we could say about as close as the equivalent to the striker nowadays as to what you are. Which people sometimes wonder, Andy Carroll may not fit in with the West Ham way, but you seem to thrive on it.
Well, yeah. I mean, we didn't actually play every ball from the back, you know, in terms of starting play through the keeper, through the back four and through the pitch. More often than not, Parksy would kick it long and I'd get on the end of it. And that was good for me because, you know, it brought me into the game straight away. And, you know, I like battling against centre-back. And if I could then knock it down and get us in possession, then the next job was to get in the box and get on the end of whatever came in, whether it was from a wide player going across in or whether it was a through ball from the likes of Trevor or the other midfield players.
Yeah, I mean, we went down. The first season, we did okay. I felt we held our own. And then 79-80 was perhaps the kickstart with the FA Cup as to a purple patch of 2-3 years. What a lot of people would like the glory years for West Ham, right? So let me start again. So, yeah, so we went down 77-78. We started off well, 78-79. I think we beat Notts County 5-2 in the first game. We were quite up there, but it tailed off towards the end. Then 79-80, we were again at the top, towards the top, but then we got into the cup run. I mean, what are your memories of the FA Cup run? I'm sure you've been asked this time and time again.
Yeah, well, going back to the original point, I mean, we thought we'd go up straight away because we were... The going down meant that John was able to, and this sounds a bit harsh, but he was able to get rid of the players he wanted to get rid of. And I mean, and it's a cruel world football, you know, but one or two lads, John was able to move on, and he was able to buy who he wanted to buy to fit those positions. But we felt that mainly we'd kept this side. And so we thought we'd go up straight away. And we were really disappointed as a group that we didn't go up. You know, it took us 3 years to go up. You know, we felt we probably weren't kicking above our weight in any shape or form until that last season, which was the one after the FA Cup. But going back to the cup run, which was the second part of your question, it didn't start great for me because I'd injured my knee towards just before Christmas. I didn't play until I think it was March, and the first game back was the quarter-final of the FA Cup. So, you know, but I remember the cup run because I remember when we were coming back from, I think, I'm not sure where we played, but we were on the coach listening to the cup draw on Saturday evening, and we got West Brom away, and, you know, we all thought, crikey, you know, that's a hard game because West Brom are a good side. And really, when you're looking at the cup draw, you want to get home draw, and you feel as though, against anybody, if you get it at home, you've got a chance. So West Brom away was a very difficult game, and I know that it was Bill Parks's, you know, defining game, really. He was fantastic that day. I didn't see it. I wasn't there because, as I say, I was injured and in a cast. But I was listening to it, and I listened to all the news reports afterwards, and Parks, you know, had a fantastic game that day and kept us in it. Then we won the replay, and then I think we drew with Orient, I think.
No, we beat Orient. Yeah, we drew Orient, beat them 3-2 at their ground. Ray Stewart scored twice.
Right. Who did we play in the next round after
Swansea.
That?
Swansea. That's when you came
right,
back in.
Swansea, yeah. That was my first game back. Yeah, that's right. So, you know, the cup run for me started with the Swansea game and then, you know, the it wasn't the quarter final. It was the fifth round. The quarter-final was Aston Villa, which was raised penalty in the last couple of minutes. And then the semi-final, probably we were lucky to get the draw at Aston Villa's ground against Everton. Everton were, you know, bombing us for ages. Brian Kidd was superb for about half an hour. And then him and Ray had a fight, and Kiddo got sent off and Ray stayed on. So that enabled us really to just regroup a little bit. Stuart Pearson got the equaliser, and then we went up to Elland Road and we beat them in the replay. So, you know, the big thing about the FA Cup run for for anyone really, and any professional will tell you that the semi-final is the game to win, because it means you're playing at Wembley, and you know, whatever else happens, you've played at Wembley in the cup final.
Yeah.
We probably never truly thought we would beat Arsenal. You know, we were second division side. They were going really well in the top division. But I think we just had a slight advantage because of the nature of their semi-finals, because I think they played about four times against Liverpool, didn't they? And
they did, yeah.
And I think that, you know, that would probably take the edge off them a little bit, because, you know, those games must have drained them.
And they were in the Cup Winners' Cup final as well.
Yeah, the next week, weren't they?
Yeah,
that's right. So, yeah, it was a fantastic experience for me. I mean, if you ask any young player what their ambition would be, I think most would say that, you know, to play in the FA Cup final would be the height of their ambition. And if you listen carefully to that, you know, they don't say to win the FA Cup. Usually it's to say you played in the Cup final. So
yeah,
to play in the Cup final and walk out there at Wembley, it was a, you know, marvellous experience. To win it was almost an icing on the cake and really a bonus for me. You know, I just wanted to be able to say I've played in the Cup final. Never really dreamt that we would win it, until about 15 minutes from time, when that's when I started panicking, because, you know, that's when it becomes difficult, when you realise you've got something to lose, because we were 1-0 up.
Yeah, I mean, John's tactics on the day, were they different to what we had normally done? Because there's talk that he withdrew Pearson into a deeper role, left you sort of isolated on your own a bit, but it meant we weren't overrun.
Oh.
Is it something that they worked on, or?
Oh, Christ, no, I didn't know we were going to do that until 15 minutes before the kickoff. We'd worked on, we were a 4-4-2 team, and
yeah,
we worked on 4-4-2 all that week. And then at the third quarter to three, John took me aside and said, I'm going to play up front on your own, and dropping Stewart back into midfield. We think that'll just bamboozle Arsenal for a little while. And sure enough, it worked, because we scored after 13 minutes, and really for the first 15 to 20 minutes, the Arsenal centre-backs didn't know what day it was. They didn't know who was marking who, who was marking me, who should drop in to mark Stewart. So John's, you know, tactics that day were spot on. He'd worked it out. I mean, I think it was really one of the first times anyone had played 4-5-1, and to play in a cup final is a brave thing, because if we hadn't won, you know, he could have taken a bit of stick for it.
Yeah, I mean, as a 10-year-old kid, It was a dream come true. I was a bit young in 75, but in 80, I lived the dream with you, I could say.
Yeah, going back to John's tactics, you know, I asked Stuart afterwards, I said, did you know about that? And he just laughed. So he obviously did. I think John had told Stuart what was going to happen. And it was a good thing, because Stuart was a good player faced up. You know, he could play there. He could play midfield facing up. I was good with my back to goal, and if you turned me around and had me running at their goal, I wasn't as good a player. But Stewart could play in midfield. It was probably his best game for the club.
Yeah.
You know, he was big, had a big part in the goal, sending Dev down the left side to get that cross in. But you know, from my point of view, it was just the end of possibly a little bit of a dream of mine, because I wanted to do an Alan Taylor and score the winning goal in the cup final. And I realised once I was going to play up front on my own on that day, which, if you say you were there and you're 10 years of age, you might remember it was baking hot. And
yep,
I just realised that I probably wasn't going to get many chances to score. And that was just going to do the donkey work up front. But, you know, I was playing in the cup final, and I wasn't going to argue with that. And to win the cup and have an FA Cup winner's medal means everything, you know, was worthwhile for me.
Yeah, and of course it was the catalyst for the next season, where we not only had Europe, but we also had the promotion to push, because we wanted to get back up to the top division. Everybody confident going in. I think we signed Paul Goddard that season after the cup final to play up front with you. Did you get on well with Paul? Was it a good signing?
I mean, Paul was a different type of player to one I played against. I mean, Paul was very, very good touch player and good finisher, neat and tidy. he didn't have a lot of stamina. So again, that worked well for me because I loved doing the hard work, you know, because I just went out and I knew my limitations, Nigel. And I knew that if I worked hard, then the rest of the lads would appreciate that. And if Sarge could do little bits and pieces of magic in there, just playing off me, and I could win it and get it to him or get it to Trevor or get it to Dev. And then again, I was always going to get on the end of stuff in the box. So it suited me to play with Sarge because, you know, you have a smash and grab kind of combination there, don't you? You know, you'd never get two players alike doing particularly well up front. You know, you couldn't have two Paul Goddards playing together. Yeah. You probably couldn't have two David Crosses playing together, you know, because it wouldn't work. But the combination was a good one. And obviously John signed Paul with that in mind, to play off me, let me do all the battering around and running about, and Paul could do the clever stuff. So it was a good combination. And I think, between us, well, I know how many goals I got that year, and I think Paul wasn't too far short of me. And I think that might have been the club record.
I think with the cup, you went over 30.
Yeah, I got 34 because I got the Golden Boot that year, which, again, that was a big thing for me because I did rely on goals. I lived and died on goals, and I was always prepared to say that because, you know, I'd often get interviewed by people in the press who say, oh, yeah, you're doing well, you know, and you're playing okay, you know, but your goal tally's not good. And that wasn't what I wanted. I wanted people to judge me on the goals I scored. Because I regarded myself as a number nine, and a number nine's job from when I was a little boy had always been to be the goal scorer. And I think pretty much throughout my career, I was always the leading goal scorer in every club I played for, you know, and that was something I wanted to be. So if anyone asked me, you know, the team's doing well and you're not scoring, but you're making it for other people, that was no good to me. I didn't want to hear that. I had to score goals. I wanted to score goals to justify myself as a player. And I remember talking to Stuart Pearson. We were great pals, Stuart and I, and still are. I mean, I see he lives up in Manchester the same as I do. And Stuart would often say, you know, oh, I don't care who's scoring goals, just as long as the team wins. Well, I wanted the team to win, but I wanted to score the goals as well.
Yeah.
And if I didn't score, I would then accept the fact that people might say, you're not doing your job properly because you're not scoring. Because I wanted to take all the praise when I did score. So, it was a good partnership, Sarge and I. We got a lot of goals that season, and so we should have done, to be fair, because we were playing in the second tier of English football. You know, we were better than that. We should have done better in the seasons, you know, the couple of seasons before. We should have gone up earlier than we did. But as you said, it was, you know, a very good phrase. It was the catalyst winning the cup for us to go up. Although we were confident we would go up, you know, we knew that there was pressure on us because having won the cup the year before, if we didn't go up the season, you know, it was going to look pretty shabby from our point of view.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it remains the record for 2 points for a win in that division. So,
right, I didn't know that.
I think we only lost the home game against Luton, the first game at home, and then we never lost another home game.
I wasn't aware of that.
It was almost the perfect season. We got to the League Cup final.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You scored a great goal at the bowling against Spurs.
Oh yeah, that one I chipped at the far post. It was one of those things. Everyone
was it a cross or
that.
Was it a shot?
Well, everyone asked me that, and as we'd worked on the fact that the Spurs goalkeeper Barry Daines that day. Yeah. John Lyle had watched them play, and he said he comes off his line an awful lot. So he told us both, you know, myself and Sarge, I think Sarge played that day. But he mentioned to all of us, you know, he said, look, Dex comes off his line. He's off his line an awful lot. Maybe you can chip him at some stage. Just be aware of that. And I remember playing the ball through for Trevor. And Trevor, I think Trevor's shot or attempt on goal was saved by Dex, and it was pushed out wide. And I got on the end of it, and that was what was in my mind, to just try and chip it, because I knew he'd come off his line almost to the edge of his box to confront Trevor. And, you know, I just thought, well, if I can chip this towards the far post, I've got a chance it'll either drift in, or one of their defenders might be chasing back and might knock it in as an own goal, or one of our lads might get on the end of it and head it in. But as it happens, there's a chip that I put to the far post, drifted in, and the goal was down to me. So, you know, I can't honestly say I thought I'd weathered it in from such a wide position to score, but I just took the opportunity to say, well, there's no goalkeeper in there at the moment. If I can just chip it over to the far post, who knows what will happen? And luckily for me, it went in.
And it sort of highlights as well the work that John Lowell used to do, as you say now. John Lowell had obviously had Spurs looked at to gave you the information used.
Yeah, I mean, for the last 7 years, I worked for Blackburn Rovers doing the opposition analysis. So that was my job, is to go out and work things like that out. But back in those days, you didn't have anyone doing that job. But John worked that out for himself. John went to watch Spurs himself, didn't send anyone. He didn't send Eddie Bailey or anyone else. He went himself and spotted that. And just, you know, it's just one of those little things that, you know, what's that phrase they use? You know, a game of inches, isn't it? You know, those little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, just help, and, you know, it might just be that 10% or even 5%.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A bit of knowledge just helps you, and it helped us that day, because as soon as that ball broke wide and the new Danes had come out to the edge of his box, I knew that he was going to be running back 18 yards, and you know, it wasn't going to be easy for him to pick out a chip that I put in. So yeah, I mean, John was a marvellous coach, really, well ahead of his time.
After we beat Spurs, semi-final, two-legged against an old team of yours, Coventry.
Yeah.
3-2 down from the first leg. Bowling was rocking for the second game. Do you remember much about that game? We won it 2-0.
I thought we were 3-2.
No, we were 3-2 down. I think I think it was David Thompson scored twice for Coventry and once for West Ham. We were definitely 3-2 down.
I thought we were ahead when we went to Broughton back to Upton Park.
No, because Jimmy Neighbour, I don't know if you remember, I'll tell you.
Jimmy got the winner, because I nodded that down to him and Jimmy scored from that. So that was the winner, I remember that.
That was like literally the last kick of the game. It was that close to the or going to extra time, which wouldn't have pleased my mum, because I'd have been home late.
Yeah.
All night. So now we go to Wembley, League Cup final. Sammy Lee, offside or not?
Yeah, undoubtedly offside. I mean, we couldn't believe that the goal was able to stand, because Sammy, when Alan Kennedy took the shot, I mean, Sammy actually had to duck his head down so the ball could go over him. So, you know, to say he wasn't interfering with play was ridiculous, really. And Clive Thomas was such a, you know, he's such a stubborn man. Clive, you know, once he'd given the goal, nothing was going to change. And I know John got in a bit of trouble because he got called up before the FA for the comments he made to Clive.
But I think the words he said was, "I feel cheated."
Well, that's what I told that he said. I think we've got John off the hook there. He was in a bit of trouble, and there was a lot of words with cheat in them in that conversation. But John did actually say, "I feel cheated," and I because they'd got a photograph of me right next to John and Clive Thomas listening to it. They asked the FA board or the disciplinary thing asked me what John had said, and they said was, "Did he say, I feel I've been cheated?" And he did say that, and he did, but I did also say, yeah, that's all he said. So we got John off that one.
I mean, unfortunately, we lost the semi-final at Villa Park 3 days later, 2-1.
The replay, not the semi-final.
Sorry, yeah, the replay at Villa Park, 2-1. But Liverpool, champions of Europe that season, if you're going to lose to a team, we were proud in the way we acquitted ourselves.
From my point of view, the replay was probably the worst game I'd played. I hadn't been well that day. I'd had a really bad ear infection, and I really probably shouldn't have played, but because it was a replay of a cup final, I was probably too selfish, and I didn't mention it to the physio. I didn't tell Rob, and I didn't tell John how ill I felt. And I didn't carry my weight. I mean, I apologised to the lads after the game because it was really the worst game I'd played for the club. I was just nowhere near. I couldn't concentrate when I was out there. It was just so difficult. And I knew as soon as I was out there that I should have coughed to the medical staff and said I shouldn't play. So it was a big disappointment to me, and I felt fairly responsible for the fact that we lost, because I just didn't pull my weight at all. And, you know, that was a big mistake I made. So if I'd have been anything like, you know, we might have won that game, or I'd certainly done a little bit better. So
yeah,
it's a big blot on my career at West Ham, that one. And I apologise mainly to John, but, you know, in fact, John gave me a bollocking afterwards because all of the lads went to the fans and clapped the fans,
yep,
almost to say thanks very much for coming and sorry we've lost. And I went straight up the tunnel. John said, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "John, I couldn't face the fans after the way I played. I couldn't go and apologize, couldn't go and applaud them. I said I just felt so bad about how I played." And John accepted that. He said, "Well, you know, in future," he said, "you really should, with a team, you should go up, all 11 of us should go to the fans." And I said, I just felt I couldn't. I said, I didn't pitch my weight into that game at all. And I said I was so disappointed in how I played that I just couldn't face, applauding the fans. So he did give me a bit of a rocket, but he did accept why I'd done it.
Well, personally, I'm sure the fans have never, ever would hold anything against you in that regard. So I think we're good there.
But it's something that I learned. I was 30 years of age, and they say you learn something every game. And that was one thing I learned, that if I wasn't fit and I wasn't going to be able to play to say 100% ridiculous, because you were never 100%. You were always something like 85% upwards when you played. You know, there's always something wrong with you. But it taught me that if I really felt that I shouldn't play, then I would be on a bound to do that. And so after that, I never ever played again if there was something fairly seriously wrong with me.
I mean, only looking at the stats, you never seem to have a big injury problem during your time at West Ham. It seems you played the high 30s, 40 games a season, even 50 in that 80-81. I think West Ham played 60 games that season. You played in over 50 of them. So
it's true. But, you know, we were very working class, Nigel, in terms of we thought we should go on. If you got a bit of a niggle, you played, because if you didn't play, your money wasn't as good. You know, I was on appearance money and bonuses, the same as probably a lot of the other lads. And my wage could double if I played, you know, from the basic. My wage could double if I was in the team and we won. That could double my money that week, you know. So, and that was a big difference in what the pay packet could be. So we wanted to play. We wanted to play. So you would play with the odd niggle. And it really, it was, you're right, I did play a lot of games over the five seasons. And I think I played 230 games in five seasons, something like that. So, you know, that's a fair ratio. And it was only afterwards that I did get injuries. I had an injury when I went to Man City, and I had a couple of illnesses that cost me when I was playing for West Bromwich Albion when I came back.
Second
from America, and then I had an injury when I played for Bolton to finish my career because I fractured my skull, and that's actually not the stuff in it. I mean, you know, if any West Ham fan had watched me play after that injury, they wouldn't have thought it was the same player because it just really knocked the stuffing out of me completely.
Well, just so you know, you played 223 games for West Ham, scoring 97 goals. So that's
right.
In 4.5 seasons. I mean,
yeah.
That is impressive. I mean, if I compare that to Di Canio, one of my favourite all-time players, who's probably at West Ham 4.5 seasons, I bet his stats don't tally up. I think he only got about 50 goals. So.
Right, yeah. Well, it goes back to what I said earlier on. You know, I regarded myself as a goal scorer. If people now ask me, they say, I used to play football, didn't you? What position were you? I was a goal scorer. That was my job. So I did, you know, I lived and died on goals. I made no bones about that. I felt that was the job. You know, number nine, when I was a very young player at Rochdale, and I'd never played up front, this might surprise you, but until I became a professional footballer for Rochdale, I'd never played up front. I'd never been a striker. I was always a right winger. And the first time I was picked to play for Rochdale, I asked a mate of mine called Bobby Downs, who played for Watford for a long time. And I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to play up front. He said, wherever the ball is on the pitch, whoever's got the ball, he said, make sure they can hit you with it. Wherever you are, whether it's a fullback 50 yards away or whether it's a midfield player 5 yards away, make sure they can get it to you. And when it comes to you, hold the ball up, give it back to one of us, and then get into the box and get on the end of it. And that was what I did, really, for 20 years. That was how it sounds simplistic, but it was that was really what I did for the 19, 20 seasons I played. And the biggest part of it was getting on the end of stuff and scoring goals, because once you do that, you're always going to have a chance of getting a contract at the end of the season, either with your club or if they throw you out, with another club who looks at your goal record and says, oh, we'll take him.
I mean, no one can argue you was a goal scorer. I mean, that takes us on now. We've got promoted. Spurs signed Ray Clements. His own debut, I believe, is against West Ham. You score 4 goals that night.
Yeah, it was just one of those days for me. It was,
your best night as a West Ham player?
Well, I think it would have to be... I probably played better games for the club than that, but the implications of what I did that day are still reverberating now. I mean, when it comes to you know, the anniversary of that game or whenever we play Tottenham, you know, still people on Twitter and Facebook and stuff still come on about those 4 goals. So it has helped me to kind of etch a bit of something into the folklore of West Ham, because, you know, to score a winning goal against Tottenham is, you know, it's like diamonds from heaven, isn't it, for a West Ham?
It invokes legendary status.
Yeah, look, it was one of those things. I mean, it could have been Paul Goddard who got all 4 that day. It just happened to be me. But, it was a good day for me, a good day for the club, because we'd just come up. We'd drawn at home to Brighton in the first game of the season on the Saturday, which is a bit disappointing. And then to go to Tottenham, and I think then went to Sunderland on the Saturday. You know, we're looking at drawing at home with Brighton and not getting 2 points. So would it be 3 then? Probably 3.
3. It was the first season of 3 points.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we're then looking on the Sunday and Monday thinking, wow, we've got two away games, one at White Hart Lane and one at Sunderland at Roker Park. What we're going to get from them, as it happens, I think we won both games. I'm fairly sure we beat Sunderland as well. So it was just a great start for us to get that platform to say, well, you know, we're two games in now on Wednesday morning after we beat Tottenham the night before, and we've now got 4 points, you know, so it was a good platform for us and it gave us a bit of self-belief.
I'm thinking off the top of my head now, did you not score 5 once against Grimsby for West Ham?
No, I got 4. Scored 5. That was the day we cemented promotion.
Right,
Up at Grimsby.
I know we won 5-1, so you got 4.
We won 5-1, I got 4, yeah. And funnily enough, that day, people asked me, funnily enough, about the match ball for the Tottenham game, said, have you still got it? And I actually gave it to Phil. Because after the Grimsby game, when I got all 4 goals and I walked away with the ball, and Phil said, I'll never get one of them. I said, what do you mean? He said, however well I play, he said, and save as many shots as I possibly can, he said, I'll never get a match ball. He said, it's always you goal scorers who get the match ball for getting a hat-trick. So I said, next time I get a hat-trick, I'll give you the ball. And that was the Tottenham game. It was only about 4 games later, actually. Because, you know, we had the summer. It was towards the end. The Grimsby game was the end of one season.
It was the April, yeah.
And the Tottenham game was the second game of the season, the next season. So we're getting the 4 there. And Phil just said, right, can you remember what you said at Grimsby? And I said, yeah, okay. So I gave that to Phil. So he's got that and not me.
I mean, that was to be your last season with West Ham before you left us to go to Man City.
Yeah.
A good move for you, did you think?
No, not particularly. I didn't really. It was a combination of circumstances, really. I was getting married to a girl from back up home from the same village as me. And the idea of going back to Manchester or coming north always appealed to me. You know, I always thought this is where I'll finish my career. I'll go back north after being at Norwich and Coventry and West Brom and then West Ham. It's just that towards the end of that season, that first season back in the top division, I just felt as though I might have peaked and was going over the top and coming down the other side as far as West Ham's fans were concerned. And I just didn't want to have the next season and not be quite as good. You know, I was getting up towards 32 then, I think. And I didn't want that to be quite a disappointing season where, you know, I wasn't the player the fans thought I had been for the previous 5. And I just thought maybe it's the time to go. Maybe, you know, if I go on my own terms, I'll leave the club when I've done, you know, what I've done. I was always disappointed. I mean, you said I got 97 goals. Yeah. I think I got 99. That's what I've got in records. That I got 99 goals because I knew I'd got 98 when we played the last game of the season at Wolves. And I knew I needed 2 to get 100, and I wanted to do that. I only got 1. I think we drew 1 each, and I got our 1.
I'll double check that.
And so I knew I'd got 99, but I would have liked to have got 100 goals. But I thought if I just leave the club now, I'm on the top, then no one can ever say, oh, you know, yeah, he did well for 5 seasons and, you know, he did so well in the last season he was here. And so, yeah, and because I was marrying a girl from up this end of the country as well, my family was here, obviously. So it did appeal to me to go back up north. As it happens, the move to City wasn't a great one for me. I didn't particularly get on well with John Bond. Didn't think he was a terrific manager. I got an injury early on in the season, in pre-season, and I never really was fully fit. And I didn't fit, really. And there was lots of times during that season I wish I'd never left West Ham. I mean, even now, you know, I relish those times, you know. And if I had one more season, maybe I would have got more than 34 goals or whatever, you know. But, you know, that's how it was. And I just thought, if I leave now on my own terms, it'll be the first time I've ever done that. Usually it's because either the club I was playing for realised that they could get rid of me and get money for me, or another club came in because they thought I might do something for them. So this was the only time really that, because my contract had come in that season, that I was able to leave, and I thought I thought it was the right thing to do. In retrospect, maybe it wasn't. Maybe I should have had another season.
Yeah, I mean, John Bond was an ex-West Ham player. Did he play the same type of football as West Ham?
It wasn't that. He did like to play. John liked to play football like John Lyle did. You know, he was a West Ham man through and through. It's just it's his manner. He wasn't a great man manager. You know, I've had 5 years of John Lyle. I mean, I was never going to get a better manager than that. I mean, I'd played for John Giles for a couple of seasons before with West Brom and Vancouver Whitecaps, and Johnny Giles was a fantastic manager. John Lyle, fantastic manager. Ron Saunders is a terrific manager for me as a 20-year-old, you know, to learn the game, to learn how to deal with centre-backs. But to go, John Bond was different. He had his own methods and, you know, his man management style really didn't suit me. And I think that reflected where I played, to be honest. You know, if you asked a Man City fan, they'd probably, you know, yeah, I remember him coming. You know, and they certainly wouldn't hold me in the same regard as a West Ham fan would.
Yeah. All right. We're coming to the end now. I've got some short questions now for you. What the first one you've answered, favourite team as a kid?
Yeah. Newcastle, yeah.
I mean, so who was your favourite player as a child growing up? Who did you want to be when you was in the playground?
Yeah, it's a good question, really. Because I'd never played as a striker, you know, it wasn't a striker. I don't really know if I had a favourite player. It's a good question. I don't know. There's a lot of players. The thing is, when I was a kid, you know, I never thought I was going to be a professional footballer. You know, professional football didn't come from the same town as me. You know, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And of course, you remember, Nigel, that in those days, there'd only be one game a season on television, which would be the FA Cup final, and that's all you watched. So, you know, I just relished football. And if there's any football I wanted to watch, you know, if I could go to a football match, I would go and watch a football match. So I didn't really have any favourite players at all. And when I became a professional, then I started realising, you know, that watching strikers, watching people like Alan Clark at Leeds, how Dennis Law played, Wyn Davies at Newcastle, you know, the big Welsh lad, he was good in there. And the one I would probably have thought would be the person I might have become would have been, I don't know if you remember, the lad who played up front with Clark at Leeds called Mick Jones. You know, he worked and worked and got goals and you know, did all the donkey work. And in the end, I kind of thought that's probably where I'm going to be. You know, his work rate was fantastic. And I always just thought that whatever happens, if your work rate is good and you try and try and try, even if you crap on that particular day, then the fans might forgive you.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. You may want to answer this, you may not. Best player you played with at West Ham?
Oh, Christ. Such a good team that I played with, especially the 81 side. What do you like best, ice cream or an Indian meal, you know?
I wrote it down and I'm thinking, because I know some professional, it's hard to pick one out. Sometimes they can go, yes, this man. I've heard it asked before where players said, oh, this man, and a lot have gone, too many to choose from.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Phil Parks probably was the final piece in the jigsaw for us at West Ham.
Yeah.
You know, with all respect to Mervyn and Bobby Ferguson, we had a top class, probably a world-class goalkeeper, which was great. You know, he kept us in so many games. Billy Bonds, how can you dismiss Billy Bonds if you're saying, you know, I'd rather have another player than Billy Bonds with what he did and what he had. Because, again, you've got a player, Billy, who made the most of everything he had, really, didn't he? You know, he wasn't a Trevor Brooke and he wasn't an Alan Devonshire. But you know what you're going to get with Bill, and you got it every week. Then you've got Trevor Brooke in, probably the best player, if you had to pin me down. But then again, how do you compare him with Alan Devonshire, who, you know, was so good and, you know, was really a revelation for coming as a £5,000 signing from a non-league club. So I think those four players, would probably be in my top four, and I'd have to pick one of them. And if I did have to pick one and you pin me down, it would probably be Trevor.
Trevor, yeah. Okay. Was there any players coming through when you was at West Ham as a youth that you thought he will make it?
Well, Ollie, obviously, you know, getting into the cup final team at the age of 17, you know, I always thought he would have a good chance. I'm trying to think who was there and thereabouts when I was there. I mean, Nicky Morgan, I thought Nicky might have had a chance. Old-fashioned centre forward, probably a bit like myself. There's a young boy called George Cowie who never really fulfilled all of his potential. And the one who, funnily enough, we did really like as a group of lads who we all thought, oh, this kid's good and he's got a chance. John never really gave this kid a chance, and he made the best of his career at other clubs, and that was Ray Houghton.
Yes. He played one game for West Ham.
Yeah, and I think that was at Arsenal, I remember.
Yeah, it was.
And I can remember Ray making his debut that day, and we lost. And I don't think John must have fancied him as a player. And we all thought he had a chance. And, you know, it wasn't a surprise when he... I'm trying to think where he went. Did he go to Fulham
but
first?
But he went to Fulham first before Oxford. I mean, but if you look at the players in front of him...
Devonshire, Pike, Allen. It's a fair point, Nigel. But to only play one game for West Ham, you know, and then do what he did, Fulham, Oxford, and then Liverpool, you know, I always thought Ray had a chance. And obviously, you know, subsequently his career with the caps he got for the Republic and his career at Liverpool, you know, speak for themselves. So I think Ray would be the one I always thought had a bit of a chance, and sure enough, it did.
Right, and my last question. The best strike partner at West Ham you played with?
Christ,
off the top of my head, I wrote down three.
I played with
Stuart Pearson, Paul Goddard.
Right, I mean, you know, as far as the finish is concerned, you know, you couldn't dismiss Derek Hales, although he's only played for half of one season with Derek, but he was a marvellous finisher. I mean, there's a lot of things he didn't have in his game, but he's a fantastic finisher, so cool in front of goal. Pop was one of my, because I was a Newcastle United fan, Pop was one of my boyhood heroes. So to play alongside him was good, and also interesting for me because I learned so much from him about how West Ham played. I learned loads of things about what Trevor was going to do with the ball at any given time. And I learned that off Pop just by watching him, watching his movement when I played with him. And I got a lot of goals from Trevor's passes because of that, because I learned and I spotted what Pop did in particular situations. And once Pop had left, I started doing that, and the ball all of a sudden came to make my feet 5 yards out and I'd score. So Pop was a fantastic learning thing for me. Stuart Pearson, you know, probably his best years were at Manchester United. I don't even, Stuart wouldn't disagree with that. But that cup final, you know, that was his best game. And then Sarge, the situation we had with that second division season when we got like 50 odd goals between us, very difficult to pin one down. If I had to say who was the best player I played with, I would think it would be Pop Robson.
Pop Robson. All right, David. Well, I can only thank you for my childhood. I was lucky enough, as I say, I started watching West Ham 1977-78 season. So your formative years are the ones you always look back fondly, and you were one of the stars of them. One last question. On photographs, as the team come out, did you always walk out the same way? Because it seems, I think, you always stood behind Billy Bonds.
I always wanted to go out second. That was one of my few superstitions. I always wanted to go out behind Bill. I don't know why, really. Perhaps I did it one day and I got goals and I thought that... or maybe I was just conscious of the fact that if you had games were televised, when the captain came out with the ball, you always might get on television and your family, your friends and family might see you on Saturday night on Match of the Day. I don't know, really. I don't know why it happened. But, yeah, I always wanted to come out second, and I usually did. I think I did in the cup final. Yeah.
So that's it. It did end quite abruptly. They did actually go on to speak for another 15 minutes personally and a chat, but that's not for broadcast. There you go. That's all we have time. We'll be back on Monday to talk about the Swansea and the West Ham game, and hopefully we'll be talking about Bwin. But for now, that's it.
Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast. Bobby Moore, more than just a podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.